I was going somewhere.
Dang it.
Let's give it a minute.
Dunkin' Coffee Podcast. We're talking cafes today. A lot of us in our daily routines go to certain cafes. We look for certain cafes because of our tastes and our comfort level with a certain environment. And I want to talk about that. I want to sort of illustrate and piece apart why we go to cafes. What about a certain cafe will draw us to be a patron? And it's different for different people. The conversation really comes out of some talks I've had in our group interviews, just trying to learn about people and how they approach coffee and how they might be a fit for our company. And it's been eye-opening in terms of even our business and how we position ourselves to hit a particular market for coffee. So Christian, going back to your formative years and try and not think about today, but why did you go to the coffee shops you went to, and which ones did you go to?
The first coffee shop that really jumped out at me is I grew up in Sheboygan, Wisconsin, which is about an hour north of our factory here in Milwaukee. And at the time, there was a coffee shop called Wonderful World. And Wonderful World was a fantastic place if you were a middle school slash high school guy.
It kind of sounds like, what's that Michael Jackson playground? Neverland?
Neverland. Yeah, wasn't quite the same thing. But at the time, we had maybe one or two coffee shops, and this is a place that served huge mochas. My drink of choice was a blackberry mocha.
Nice.
Huge, a 20-ounce cup, ceramic cup. And they had live music and board games, and it was just a nice place to go hang out. The coffee was awesome. I more so went there just to hang out.
Mm.
It was fun. It was a fun place. And I spent a lot of time in college at coffee shops because they had free Wi-Fi, unlimited coffee at some places where if I just got a mug, I can get refills, and I could just kind of hunker down for the entire day.
Huh. I grew up in, well, where I'm going for Christmas is Wichita Falls, Texas. That's where my parents live, and it's where my wife's parents live still. Ended up there through the Air Force as an Air Force brat, and it's kind of in an area of Texas where generally people don't care about artistic things too much. Like the restaurants that really are a big deal are the chains. Any kind of new hip thing that shows up will be closed in about 3 years. And Starbucks is it there. I mean, there's one or two mom and pop shops at like in the corner of a bank or something like that. But the only coffee shop I really visited from the time I was 16 and started drinking coffee seriously to the time I moved to Wisconsin was Starbucks. A couple things we can pull from our stories are some of the reasons that people do go to coffee shops. So I think Christian mentioned one thing that brings a lot of high schoolers, early college people into the coffee scene. And Christian, why was that? Why'd you go there?
The environment. Like, it was just, there was live music, there was board games, there was places for me to go sit. There's actually lots of comfortable seating, comfortable couches, just hanging out. And I recall when I was a new barista, I'd always kind of whine and complain because I'd want to have stuff that was familiar. Stone Creek doesn't really do live music in our cafes. We don't really have a ton of board games. I'm like, well, why can't we just do that? Like, that's what got me into cafes, thinking that everyone else just wants the exact same thing. But I have such fond memories of just sitting and hanging out in a coffee shop.
Yeah, and I think it's just important to keep in mind that all coffee shops, when they're really conceived, are conceived to meet a certain market. And when I was in grad school, there were two shops kind of down the road, and one of them was a quick in-and-out to-go place, and then another one was basically a bookstore. Like, it had all sorts of space to sit and to study, and it's really kind of what the owner chooses to do. But I think that environment factor for coffee shops, for certain coffee shops, really does become a major draw for the novice coffee drinker. They begin drinking coffee because they need a place to study, and then they start experimenting with different things on the menu, and then they fall deeper and deeper in love with the whole kind of experience. What's interesting is as you sort of look in the Milwaukee coffee scene, as you see different roasters kind of take different spins on why should people come to our shop? Like, what is it that's unique about this place that will draw people or that will cause people to come through the doors? And there's one roaster in particular that has nailed this environment thing square on the head. A lot of people go to study, a lot of people go to hang out because they have these big, huge, beautiful spaces, and that's Colectivo. I mentioned another reason people would go to a cafe is because of location. Like, if it's all that's there or if it's what's convenient, then people will go to a cafe. And I think we undersell this one. Whenever I ask the question in a group interview, like, why do you go to a cafe? A lot of people don't necessarily see it on the front of their mind. Like, I go there because it's convenient. Because they automatically think of, well, when I purpose to go to a coffee shop. They don't think of, well, when I need coffee and I stop somewhere. So that's how Starbucks, I think, became a thing, was people wanted coffee, they needed coffee. And if you look at Starbucks locations, they're almost always in a convenient spot.
Convenient spot, right in the middle of busy traffic patterns. Like, they know exactly where to put their cafes, and it's a convenience. Especially, that's why they put drive-thrus in. Like, it's convenient for people not to get out of their car. In fact, I think the first Starbucks that I really started going to in Green Bay, Wisconsin, was, like, in an old bank building. So you had, like, the two-lane drive-through, and it was the busiest Starbucks in town because of that. Even in Milwaukee, like, occasionally people mention, like, the coffee market is super saturated. I think there's 6 roasters, maybe total, 7 roasters if you count some really micro roasters in town. And we're not a big coffee market. And a couple of years ago, I spent a week in Portland, and there's literally a coffee roaster on every other corner. And how does that survive? The only way that works is if coffee drinkers are hyper-local. Like, they're going to go to the place that's nearest to them. You might have a handful, 10% that will go to a particular place, but they get into their habits and they're used to kind of having that quick fix near you. Drug dealer syndrome. Yeah. You can cut that out. But it really is. Like, you go to the place that's the easiest and most convenient and least painful, where you have the least painful experiences. And that's probably the next thing to mention, is like consistency of product. It doesn't always need to be the best coffee, but as long as it's consistent, you're going to develop a customer base.
Yeah, and that's where Starbucks, again, just nails it on the head. They've taken consistency and convenience and built a just bajillion-dollar business off of it. And I'd actually go back, or I'll jump in with what you were saying in terms of the saturation of the Milwaukee coffee market. I would say it's really undersaturated. If you spend any time in Milwaukee's Third Ward, which is like a square mile, maybe, you will find 5 or 6 different unique coffee shops. So, like, different shops that serve different roasters, or certain shops that are run by certain roasters, like within a square mile. It's crazy. And so if you're in there, you go, yeah, this market is oversaturated. But if you go a 5-minute drive over to West Dallas, or a 10-minute drive to New Berlin, if you go up on the North Shore, there's actually not even many Starbucks around. There's a whole lot of market out there that we're just, like, not hitting, because we're so focused, I think, on the edgy market that already exists. And so there I would draw a kind of a distinction line between the convenience cafe and then the environment cafe, and say generally people want to play the environment cafe game. Like, it's fun because they're big and beautiful and, like, you get to show off who you are, whereas fewer people want to play the convenience game because it's not as sexy. But the market for the convenience game is way bigger.
So jumping back to consistency, I think an interesting way to experiment with this is to go on Yelp, like Drew was talking about, and he couldn't find the type of shop that he was looking for as he was scrolling through the internet and Yelp or things like that. When you go to a new town, find the highest star place, and if you're like a geek like me, you're going to go check it out. And I wager, like, 50% of the time, it won't be the kind of coffee shop that a quote-unquote coffee geek will be expecting. It'll probably be a really comfortable, laid-back, I'm sure the baristas know their regular customers, but they might have dirty steam wands, they might have not ideal drip coffee, they might have tons of flavored syrups, but I guarantee that place is going to be busy day after day. And the reason that customers love it is because it's consistent. They have the same product, the same environment, they offer something to the barista or to the customer that they just want to go back for. And that's not always high-end specialty coffee.
Yeah, there was a cafe where I got my start in coffee in Watertown, Wisconsin, so out in the boonies. And I mentioned two cafes earlier, the environment one and kind of the convenience one, and I worked at the fast convenient one with the drive through. But, like, we saw the same customers every day. It wasn't just consistent for the customers, it was consistent for the employees. And it'd been there 10 years, and I don't think it's going anywhere soon. Just built totally around the same menu constantly. Like, they haven't changed their menu in 5 years. They are serving the exact same coffees they have for the last 10 years and have built their presence around consistency. Convenience, environment, consistency. Why else would somebody go to a coffee shop?
Occasionally people go to cafes just because of the mission that they say that they support. And I think of cafes that are only fair trade, organic, or support a children's orphanage in Honduras or Guatemala. There are people who purport to buy their coffee only from those places. I'm sure most of them are completely legitimate in their operations. They might not be buying the best coffee in the world, but they're buying coffee that supports a mission, and that's something that customers will likely attach to, I would say.
Yeah, I think it's probably a bit of a niche. And there was a cafe in Lawton, Oklahoma, that has since closed down, that was kind of a music joint, music venue that me and my friends would occasionally go to. That was like that. They only served organic stuff, only fair trade. And if that stuff you're super passionate about, then you will go out of your way to get what you want. And, I mean, all of us do it in certain areas of our lives. We'll go out of the way for something we're really dedicated to. For some of us, that's a certain kind of coffee. Others, it's a certain kind of food. It may be a religious organization. But it really just depends on who you are. There are two smaller poles, I think, that cafes have. And one of them is pretty easily identifiable as a smaller pull, and that would be sex appeal. Strength of brand really would be the scientific term for it. Is people want to identify with something that is cool, something that is sexy. Like, they feel cool going to a certain coffee shop if it's like on that cutting edge in terms of aesthetics, brew methods, barista style. They feel cool going there. And I think the folks who tend to patronize a cafe for those reasons will also peruse and take part in other brands for similar reasons. I would draw the equation of Beats by Dre. Headphones that are, you know, they're good, but, like, they're probably not as good as what you're being charged for them. But those headphones have been so well marketed, and they're cool looking, snazzy colors, association with Apple. Like, they're sexy, and so people want them.
Man, I must not be in the cool market. When I was in the market for headphones recently, I didn't even look at Beats for Dre. I was going right for the technical performance,
sure,
like,
were.
What headphones sound the best. That's all I care about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting thing. Like, if you build a particular brand presence, you're going to appeal more to one demographic that you want to appeal more to, but you also risk, like, not appealing to another brand demographic. You might be targeting hipsters, like the really young, hip generation, and there might be people that are business folk that either want to feel like that, or they see that branding and they're not even going to interact with your brand because of that, because they'll judge you based on your brand perception. I think the same could go the other way. If you're trying to be too much of a mom-and-pop shop, it's potential that you will appeal to one demographic. You might not appeal to the hip and cool demographic. But the same goes with any kind of brand decision.
I think it is totally cool, actually, to make the distinction in terms of your shop and what you want to be. Like, any good marketer says yes to a demographic and says no to another. That's just business. I mean, if you're going to position yourself to be interesting in any way, you're going to actually turn yourself off to somebody else. And it's just important to sort of own that. And because you'll get complaint emails from people who don't really understand, or a market you didn't hit square on. And you just have to be expecting it and say, well, that's okay. I mean, that's who we are and what we want to be. Just make sure you're setting yourself up to be viable. Because sometimes we pick a market that's not actually financially viable. And that's not good. Not if you want to be in business more than a couple of years. The last kind of draw point for a cafe that I think is pretty small. Not as small as Sex Appeal, but smaller than we'd like to think is actually quality. And when I say quality, I don't mean generally good. I mean, like, the best. I mean the intelligentsia, the literal intelligentsia of a particular market. And that's a super premium, high-end. Like, this is the best you can get. There's not that big of a market for that.
I would agree with that. And it saddens me a little bit because we spend a lot of time sourcing really amazing coffees. And that's not saying that our customers don't appreciate the coffees that we source.
Sure.
But we don't have a ton of people coming here banging down the door for Geisha or Finca Kilimanjaro, the queen, which is an amazing coffee we launched in December. The majority of your people are not going out to find the best quality coffee in the town. So I was in Galena, Illinois this past weekend and was exploring the town. There's a handful of coffee shops, and I need my coffee fix, otherwise I get cranky throughout the day. And as we're walking through the night before, I'm peeking into coffee shops. I'm like, I don't know if I want to go in there. And I see this place. It's a chocolate shop that has a Marzocco Linea PB and a Malkunik K30. So they have all the stuff. I'm like, I'm going to check this chocolate shop out instead of these coffee shops. And I wager I was the only person on that street that was drawn into that chocolate shop because they had a La Marzocco machine versus a different machine. It was a beautiful shot of espresso that I had. I went back the next day for another one because it was so great. But I wager the majority of the people will randomly just go into the coffee shop that has the dark roasted Kenya brewing at all times and the 15 different styles of syrup in the cafe.
It's because very few people, and this is totally cool, again, like it's just about sort of what we want. Very few people will take the time to find the very, very best thing of coffee just because, well, number one, it may not be what they want in terms of taste profile because they like a darker roast, they're familiar with it, you know, and that's what they like, which is awesome. Or they just need caffeine and they don't have time. Like, they just don't want to take time, which I totally get because occasionally I'll swing in for two sausage burritos from McDonald's on my way into work because I don't have time to eat the super fancy, nicer breakfast that I can get from Milwaukee Public Market because I got to get to an 8 o'clock meeting. So it's just about priorities, and we all have different priorities. A lot of coffee roasters starting out, coffee companies, coffee shops are kind of putting all their eggs into the quality basket, assuming that they will draw enough customers who want the very best. And for now, they will, actually. The market of people who want the very best is growing, and if you're good at executing, then enough customers will find you to support your business for now, and time will tell really as to whether or not that's a sustainable business model. We favor more in terms of diversification, so we try and be the very best in terms of quality that we can be in the market that we operate in, and we try and place our cafes in convenient environments. And we try and be consistent. We do a lot of barista training to try and operate on a lot of different levels in terms of what draws people into a coffee shop. So back to my problem. Last year I was going to Amarillo, not where I'm from 3 hours east, Wichita Falls, but I was going to Amarillo because my brother goes to school in Canyon and he was doing a dance production called Texas in Paladero Canyon. Anyway, so I'm down there for 2 days, and I really wanted to make sure I had good coffee. So before I left Milwaukee, I was searching for coffee shops. And I looked it up, and there was, like, one bar and two mom-pop shops that were into the blended drinks. Not my style. I was looking for the very, very best. And it wasn't until I got down there that I actually found anything. Like, it was because my brother had been around, and he's like, we should go to Palace. That's where all my friends and I go. He didn't really like coffee that much, but his friends spoke highly of it. So we went there, and Palace is a great coffee shop, multi-roaster. They've had national barista competitors. Just a really cool place, good environment, and great coffee. But I never would have found it without his recommendation, even after Googling and stuff. So when you go home, if you're going home for the holidays or if you're traveling, how do you find that perfect coffee shop for you? Like, regardless of where you're at, if you're looking for the best or you're just looking for a good, clean experience, like, how would you find it? And Christian mentioned Yelp, I think, as kind of a good first step. And I think that will get you to a safe place.
Yeah, I think the most important thing that I've learned on Yelp, and Yelp is an awesome community sourcing app where you can get reviews for your shop, is to look at a shop and then click on one or two of the people that have commented either positively or negatively and see if they like some of the other places that you would tend to go to. If they don't go to that shop. If they do, then you can kind of get a gist, like, okay, maybe they like the similar things in food or similar things in coffee that I do. And typically that works well. And sometimes the 3-star cafe might be more approachable to your style of coffee than the 5-star cafe in town.
True. Understand what it is you're looking for. If you're looking for the hippest place, or if you're not looking for the hippest place in town, make sure that you're not going to the hippest place in town. Because a lot of high-end, edgy coffee places train their baristas to only appeal to the people looking for the best. So if you're not sort of educated in coffee already, going into one of those places might leave you feeling like an alien.
I would say my other rule of thumb is to look at the menu, and the less items there are on the menu, the better it will probably be. It's not a hard and fast rule, but I use this with restaurants as well. Mm. If they have a really small menu, I know that they're probably really good at a limited amount of things versus being kind of okay at a lot of different things. So trying to find someone who's really focused and really into what they're doing.
What if you're like me and you're looking for the edgy, highest quality experience? I've found a better strategy for uncovering who will deliver that experience, and that's actually Instagram. So you can only search so well on Instagram, but you can do your Google search for coffee shops or coffee. And then once you have that particular neighborhood or area picked out, look at the Instagram accounts for those companies/coffee shops. If it's your average mom and pop shop, you're going to see a lot of pictures of muffins and maybe a latte with a lot of whipped cream and then a smiley face with chocolate syrup on it. That's my roots. And then the really high-end coffee shops, you're going to see more pictures of whole bean coffee. You're going to see pictures of latte art. And that doesn't guarantee, like, amazing execution, but what it does show you is that they care. Like, latte art is really a proxy for quality. It doesn't guarantee quality, but it'll tell you, hey, these people care enough to pour latte art, to learn how to steam milk, to pour milk. They probably care enough to pull a good shot and deliver a good customer experience.
And, you know, if you're going to a major city, there's a handful of amazing coffee lists out there on BuzzFeed, USA Today. They're not 100% perfect, but they will give you a sense in the right direction of what places to check out. And Stone Creek is on a couple of those lists, so you should pay more attention to those
lists. Yeah, I think if we're on the list, that'll put you in the right direction at least. Last thing I would do is ask your barista, because baristas working in the industry, they can probably pass off a recommendation to you. If they've been in the city, which baristas tend to travel because they like to get around, they might be able to point you in the direction of a shop that'll suit your needs. Also, we're pretty accessible here at the Stone Creek Coffee Podcast. Just email us, podcast@stonecreekcoffee.com, and ask for a recommendation of a coffee shop in a city, and I bet we can get you one. We're cool like that. So just take the time. You'll find the coffee you want to find, and I like to, if there's several places I would be interested in checking out, I try and check them all out. I'll get 3 straight coffees, driving straight from coffee shop, just to really find my footing that first day I'm in a place, and then I'll just go back to my favorite one the rest of the time I'm on vacay.
Cool.
Next time you catch us will be 2016, and we're going to talk about how you handle coffee at home. I think a lot of people get their coffee and then they fumble it before they brew it. And we want to show you how to keep that thing nice and secure so that you carry it into the end zone of deliciousness.
Well, looking forward to our instant replay on coffee faux pas.
It's going to be pretty dope. In the meantime, if you have ideas you would like us to talk about, you want to learn something special about coffee, we can probably dig up an answer for you if we don't have it already. So email us, podcast@stonecreekcoffee.com. you can tweet at Stone Creek Coffee or just take a picture and you can do it on Instagram. I like Instagram, so you'll get cootie points.
Cootie points.
You'll get brownie points for using Instagram. And we'll definitely get you an answer. If not on the air, we're going to send you an email within 72 hours. I guarantee that. Till 2016, we are geeks.
And we are talking about